reminding me. Also, for those of you, we will be here next week, both live in Unity's Chapel and online. But we will not be broadcasting on the 26th, the week after that. So Sunday the 26th will be not here. We will resume again, most likely, unless you hear back from me, we'll be resuming again at the beginning of January, the first Sunday in January, okay? So the only Sunday we're gonna miss is gonna be the day after Christmas. The 26th. I think that's right. Okay. I'll try to let you know that by email as well if I forget. So, anybody have any stuff left over from last week that they want to look at or share or explore before we get started into this week's stuff? I will take that as a no. Thank you, John, for sharing that. Let's see. We're on page 33. Or toity-twee, as we used to say in New York. I'm going to read the paragraph that we stopped with, or that we ended with. Hi, Sangi. Just to make a link up between our work this week and last week. Now, when you know who you are, above and beyond these things, and you no longer invest in them as who you truly are, the world before you begins to become malleable, flexible, changeable. It's not rigid. Because as we have told you, everything you see before you is a creation, a manifestation of consciousness. Wherever you look, you will find what you are looking for. I keep hearing that keeps buzzing in my head. I can't get rid of it, okay? It was a little meditation that I tapped into one night a couple of weeks ago. And it was Ram Dass giving this little meditation, but the mantra that he kept repeating was, everywhere you look, you find what you're looking for. And what I do sometimes is I flip that around and say, well, what am I seeing? I'm seeing war and separation and hatred. Does that mean that I'm looking for it? And it does. That kind of freaks me out a little bit. I don't like that a whole lot. What you're seeing, what I'm seeing, is what I am looking for. Now, what would it be like if I was just looking for love? If I was just looking for God? If I was just looking for peace? That's what I would see. So I find that, I don't know about you guys, but I find that extremely challenging and true. So instead, you know, so the first part obviously is true. Wherever you look, you'll find what you're looking for. That's kind of very, very trite and simple. But if I flip that around and say, what am I seeing? What is the world that I'm seeing? What is the world that I'm perceiving right now? And to realize, and again, this is difficult for me sometimes, to realize that's what I'm looking for. And I hate to even say this out loud, but I'm looking for exclusion. I'm looking for separation. I'm looking for anger. I'm looking for reasons to be afraid or fearful. Now, obviously, that's not my whole life. If it was, none of us would be here right now. I certainly wouldn't. But to recognize that what I'm seeing is a result of my intention. And to realize that I can turn that around. I don't know about you guys, but that strikes me as being hugely important. So stop every once in a while. I'm suggesting stopping every once in a while and saying, what am I seeing out there? What am I seeing in here? And whatever it is, if I'm not seeing what I want to see, then change the scenery. Choose something different. And that begins with the process that these books talk about so often. And that is the process of being willing. I am willing right now to look for God or to look for peace or to look for love. I might not be seeing it right away, but I'm willing to do that. And through my willingness, that's when things begin to change. I am willing to look at this differently. I might not see it differently yet. I might not even be aware of it differently yet, but I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to see the Christ in you, even though I can't at the moment, or even though I don't think I can at the moment. Excuse me, Sanghi. Would you mind using the mic?
Oh, sure.
Thank you. Yeah, you can just take that up. There you go.
I noticed that when I manifest certain difficult situations, and then I say, why would I do this and not manifest love? I notice that those situations are gentler versions
of
the original situation.
Okay.
So I realize I'm manifesting a better, like a kinder, gentler version. So it's not love, but it's the difficult situation that seems like I can't unroot it from me. But
okay.
Thankfully, I feel gratitude. Oh, there's more understanding. There's more compassion.
It's softer.
It's softer. So I guess that's my answer.
Well, and I think that's, I would like to suggest that that's a reflection of the internal work that you've been doing on yourself. Okay. That it just doesn't happen. My view of life or my view of things or my view of myself doesn't automatically become softer or easier to handle. Most of that is, if not all of that, is the result of the work that I've been doing on myself. And sometimes we're not even aware of that. I think Sanghi would probably agree with this, is that sometimes we're actually surprised by the way I might be responding to someone or something, including myself, and I say, oh, well, that's different. So I look at myself in the mirror and I smile instead of curse, all right? I say, well, that's different. I didn't even know a change took place. So sometimes we don't even know the changes take place within ourselves until we're confronted with a situation that we used to react to or respond to in a particular way and find ourselves, I'm not responding to it that way anymore, or at least not as much. That's a great sign sometimes, just being able to discover that piece.
Sure.
Yeah, John. Thank you.
Mantra, I know who I am, know what I am, and know how I serve. And I say the part, I know how I serve, and it's like, whoops. And what you were talking about then, what I see is showing up. I don't know if I have that wrong.
No, not at all, I don't think, John. I think when I make that statement, I know how I serve, we go beyond our personal identity, because how I serve racial consciousness and how I serve myself, how I serve you, right, is a reflection that goes far beyond time and space. So when I'm thinking, how am I serving you by seeing more anger or more fear or more separation? I said, well, obviously I'm not serving myself terribly well, but I'm not serving the racial consciousness very well either. And the thing to recognize is not get into beating yourself over the head with a stick again, which is, again, a choice that I have sometimes that I remember to do. But to say, okay, I've got a choice right now to do this differently. Sanghi used the word gentler, okay? I can do the, I remember a therapist who worked with me a number of years ago. She did a lot of what we might call metaphysical work. It wasn't just talk therapy. And most of the time she would begin with a session. She would kind of hold on to my hands And she would do this little kinesiology exercise of getting, this is a yes answer, this is a no answer. And the question she would ask before we got started doing anything is, can we do this gently? And that allowed me to just, and especially when I answered yes to that, allowed me to feel safe. Because I usually had an agenda, I usually had a piece of stuff that I was struggling with or working with or wrestling with, and I was never hardly very gentle with myself. So she would always ask that question, can we do this gently? Never forgot that. So when I'm working on myself, can I do this gently? You know, even when I realize I'm not doing what I think I ought to be doing, I'm not doing it terribly well. Can I take a step back from that and say, can I do this gently? Can I change this gently? Can I transform this gently? Or can I just deal with myself a little bit more gently than I normally do? Because I don't know about you guys, but I beat the crap out of myself for not living up to the expectations that I've set for myself, which are just ego expectations. They don't have anything to do with my soul. How often I forget. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm here on Sunday morning. Okay. To remember. You guys help me remember. Thank you.
Jerry?
Yes.
I was watching a movie last night, The Shack, and it taught me a similar lesson, that we have to remember to look through the lens of God. And when you look through his lens, it's all love and it's all peace. But when I get out of focus, I see all the stuff going on, and I cause myself all this stress, and I cause myself all this worry. But if I get my lens back in focus and look through the eyes of God, I could only see love, just like you've always taught us, these little children trying to get it together and trying to play together, and no judgment. No fear. It, through God's lens, it was just pure love.
I'd like to use that too as a jumping off point for something that I mentioned to Elizabeth before we got started. We are, as human beings, we have emotions, we have feelings. All of us do. Mm-hmm. And we're sometimes deeply affected by them.
Yes.
And sometimes our feelings can be a reflection of how we relate to one another. So I'm not denying that piece. At the same time, I don't want to confuse my spirituality with my emotionality. In other words, I can feel sad, but that doesn't mean I have to be sad. That doesn't mean it has to be the ruling emotion of my life. There are times when I might not feel like loving you, but I still can love you. Even if, I mean, as parents, most of you have learned this with your kids. There have probably been some moments when you didn't feel like loving your kids at a particular time. Might be sometimes when you didn't feel like loving yourself. That doesn't mean you can't. I can love myself beyond my feelings. I can love other people beyond my feelings. My feelings are, eventually, they are a choice, but they're not the same kind of choice of choosing to, let's suppose I'm in a bad mood and I recognize that I'm in a bad mood or I'm in a low vibration mood. And I realize I can change that. I can change my thoughts to higher level thoughts. Well, the expectation that most of us have as human beings is when I raise the vibration of my thoughts, then all my feelings are going to change too. I don't know about you, but it doesn't happen for me that way. Usually takes my feelings a day or a couple of days or maybe a couple of hours at least to catch up with the new thoughts that I'm creating for myself. So it doesn't mean that I'm doing something wrong or doing something bad. That's just the way it works. That it's going to take a while for my emotional self to catch up with my spiritual self that's changed its thinking. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with me just because it takes a while for that to happen. It's just the nature of things. So how I feel has nothing to do with how close I am to God or how close I am to love or how close love is to me. I don't want to confuse those two issues, because when I do, I start judging myself as a spiritual being on my emotionality. So I say, well, I don't feel very good. Well, there must be something wrong with me. God must have left me behind. God doesn't care about me because I don't feel, I must have done something wrong. I must have done something bad. That's baloney. I feel bad because I feel bad. And then maybe there are some life circumstances that have contributed to that. And I might need to change some of those. And some of them I might not be able to change right away. But I really want to work on not letting that interfere with my sense and my ability to be able to love, to be able to care, to be a spiritual being. Nothing is real except you have all made it real. And consequently, the higher life that you live in an awareness of your worth will call to you a new landscape. And this will become realized by you as you continue to work with this text. Simply put, what do you want? What do you want in your life? What do you want for yourself? And if you really get in touch with the desire of your heart, however you want to define that right now, we will help you to allow that to come to be. That's where your willingness comes in. That's where your attitude comes in. That's where your desire comes in. If you see, like I did when I'm still seeing anger or fear or separation, I say, I don't want to keep doing that all the time. I am willing to see this differently. I am open to the help that is being offered to me, the grace that is being offered to me to see this differently, excuse me, to respond to life on a different channel and be open to that one. That's what creates something new. My willingness and my desire to create something new creates something new. Sue, would you mind using the phone? Thank you. There you go.
I really had an interesting experience the other day. I went to my doctor, and I had decided to take myself off medications, and I could tell she was extremely frustrated and trying to tell me everything, you know, about it. And I had done a lot of really deep working within and felt strongly that this is what I was to do. And partway through the conversation, I realized there was no point in me trying to explain, because she was trained a certain way and I was not doing that. And I said, I understand why you're very frustrated with me. And then I just kind of stopped talking, and I was really proud of myself. And then yesterday, I've been working with a woman who's become a mentor to me, who is really versed in A Course in Miracles and lives in a community and everything. And she said, I was the one who projected that doctor because I was not as sure of myself as I thought it was. And that doctor was an example of me having, you know, having to have somebody else, having to explain to somebody else. And like I said, I've gotten to the place where I don't have to explain myself to somebody. And kind of like you said, it's getting gentler and gentler. But she said, this is very subtle. When you really get into examining everything in your life, there is not one person or one thing that you come in contact with that you have not created yourself. And it's like, you know, and so I'm actually still kind of reflecting on this, but I know it's very true. And I remember Ken Wapnick used to always say, people who know are never insistent. And when I know, I never have to explain myself.
You don't have to prove yourself to anybody.
Yeah, but that was just like a little subtle thing that's really got me thinking.
Thank you. I'm reminded of a a wonderful Taoist saying, those who speak don't know. Those who know don't speak. Huh. Of course, where does that leave me?
Be gentle with yourself.
Yeah. But, you know, to reflect on what Sue said, if we're open to it, everything is teaching me. And I have chosen everything to teach me. So, you know, I can say, well, that's my doctor, or that's this, but that's just a reflection of me. And I needed to create that to let me know what I needed. And when I find out, as you said, that I don't need to argue with you, I don't need to prove myself to you anymore. I don't, well, actually what I'm saying is I don't need to prove this to myself anymore, because I know.
And then I won't have those people in my life.
What happens when we run out of teachers?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I don't have an answer to that one, and I'm not even close, okay?
Turn off the television.
It's all over now, baby blue, okay? When you know who you are, in your divine worth, you can understand that everyone you see before you, regardless of what they present, is also in accord with the truth of who they are, even if they don't know it. The one you don't like is still an aspect of the Creator manifested in form, because if you are this thing, it must be true for everyone you meet, and those you will never meet as well. I'm sure I might have shared this with you before. In fact, I probably did. So I'm not going to apologize for repeating old stories. But I periodically go back to that wonderful vision that Thomas Merton had on the corner of 4th and Walnut about everybody being beings of light. And of course, he had to see himself as a being of light in order to be able to see other people as that as well. But there was a follow-up statement that, you know, didn't discount the miracle of seeing everybody as beings of light. However, to me, it's the real juice, the real meat of the whole incident in his life. He said, "What I realized was I loved all these people." Wasn't just I was in this magical state where I saw everybody as beings of light. I realized that I loved all these people, even if I didn't know them. I saw beyond the personality. I saw beyond the ego consciousness. What I realized was I loved all these. That's the miracle. So that each one of us here, I believe, physically present as well as on Zoom, have a sense of our divine consciousness. Can't grab a hold of it and say, oh, there it is. But you know, you go inside and you listen. That's another piece of what this is all about here is, what is the desire of my heart? And we could answer that in many, many different ways. I would like to see peace. I would like to be love. I would like to be at peace. I would like to see a world that's calm and sane and blah, 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 all the other good. And all of that's real. Don't take anything away from that. But ultimately, if you keep pushing that, what do I want? What do I desire? What do I want for the world? If you keep pushing that for yourself, what's going to happen eventually is you're going to come to a place where there's no verbal answer to that question anymore. There's silence. Not nothing. Silence is not nothing, okay? but there's going to be silence. There's going to be, I can't push the envelope any further. I just am. Mm. And I go, oh, that's what it's all about. Becoming conscious of the I am-ness that who I am and who you are. That's what it is. Where there's seemingly nothing else to do except open ourselves even more to the truth. Because unfortunately, Paul in one of his epistles talks about, I have won the race, I have earned the prize. And that was when he was in his ego again. If you ever read Paul, it's really interesting, okay? There's this real personality, ego consciousness, and then there's this divine consciousness that speaks every once in a while. You go, isn't that interesting? Now, of course, I have to say it's my ego self that's discerning that, right? So I'm not going to apologize for that one either. Right? But it to me, it's fascinating because it's a great picture of who we are too, because we're all bouncing back and forth between that as well. So there are some passages that just blow your heart wide open. Like that thing in Corinthians about love. You know, no human being could have written something like that. You can't out of your human consciousness. And then you start talking, well, make sure your head gets covered and make sure if you're a wife, you know, you obey your husband and blah, blah. You know, and then you get into this whole other side of things. You go, well, isn't that interesting? What a perfect mirror for our own consciousness. So when he talked about, you know, winning the race and getting the prize, it's an unfortunate image. Because it engages our personality and our human consciousness. But it, to me anyway, it denies the truth that this is an ever-expanding trip. That your capacity, unconditional love, God's love itself is continually evolving. You don't get there. Just like John was saying, you drop your body and you're in another place. You're in another realm of consciousness. Well, even that isn't it. Because that's an ever-expanding, ever-evolutionary kind of thing that we're going through as well. It's constantly there. You don't get it, you be it. And even the words to that are kind of contradictory, because you know, being is not bloomp right here. Being is evolving, growing, stretching, continually open to new experience, continually open to a broader scope or broader awareness of unconditional love. Jim.
It's no coincidence, because the daily word today kind of speaks about love. And I was journaling before I got here, so I'm a little late, is that, and here's what I'm working on in terms of, can I love thy neighbor, to love the neighbor thyself? Can I love thy neighbor if that neighbor doesn't look like me? Can I love that neighbor if that neighbor culturally is different than me? Can I love that neighbor whose opinions are so opposed to mine? So that's what I'm working on in terms of loving that neighbor just because, period.
Just because he's my neighbor.
That is correct.
Won't you be my neighbor? You know where that all came from? Was Jesus got challenged one day by the scribes and Pharisees. And one of them worked up his nerve and said, what's the greatest commandment? Figuring he's gonna name one of the 10, right? And we're gonna say, well, you can't do that, because what about this one? And he said, the greatest commandment is this. Love the Lord thy God with thy whole heart, with thy whole mind, with thy whole strength. And the second is likened to this. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then another nervy guy decided to say, well, who's my neighbor? Let's see if we can get him on this one. Who's my neighbor?
We'll trick him up.
Followed by that exquisite marvelous story called The Good Samaritan, where, if you recall, this man was waylaid on the highway and beaten up and robbed, thrown over to the side of the road. And a priest walks by, sees the man, says, "I really can't help you right now. I have to hurry to the Sabbath service." And then a Pharisee or a scribe goes by and says, "Well, I really would like to be able to help you, but." The story finally ends with somebody walking by who's a Samaritan, hated by the Jews. They were anathema. They were unclean. Samaritan sees the fellow by the road, wraps him up, brings him to the emergency room, says, "Here, take care of him, and I will pay you, even if he doesn't have any insurance, I'll pay you whatever this costs." Who is the neighbor? Jesus asked. The one who walked by, the one who helped him. Go therefore and you do likewise. Wonderful line in this particular lesson this morning. The truth of who they are, even if they do not know it. The truth of who they are, even if they do not know it. Right now, all you have to do is flip on the TV and watch the news for a couple of minutes. And there are going to be a lot of people that show up that it's going to be fairly obvious. I don't think you even have to be a judgment about this. It's fairly obvious that they don't really know who they are. Okay? But can I be just as compassionate towards them? Even more so. Doesn't somebody who doesn't know who they are need more compassion than the one who does? Oh, yeah, I'll be compassionate for you, but you know, you already know who you are. You're already in the upper room, okay? You know the truth. You already have the tools to be able to use at your disposal. I mean, I will feel for you and I help you any way I possibly can. But doesn't this person who is lost in their own fear and their own sense of separateness, don't they need the love even more than you do?
They have power over me to change.
Pardon me?
They have power over me. That changes.
Well, sure, they sure does. If I give my power away. If they have power over me, where does that come from? And I agree with you, Janet. It changed the whole. But my fear—that's where my fear is. What gives you power over me? Mm. Oh my God! What's going to happen if they get elected? Right? What's going to happen if all these voting rights are taken away? What's going to happen if this? What's going to happen if that? I fall into that myself. But what I've got to realize is that's me giving my power away to my fear. And yes, when I give my power away, that changes the whole picture. I can't be compassionate if I'm powerless. That's why it's really interesting in 12 Steps of Recovery. It starts off with powerlessness. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, drugs, other people, whatever, and that my life had become unmanageable. That's the beginning. That's the beginning stage of surrender. But then it expands itself after that. Okay, into eventually believing that there's a higher power that can restore me to sanity. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Recognizing that me giving my power away in fear is not sane, is not even sensible. Because it doesn't protect me against anything. Okay, it just makes me feel worse, okay? Say, "Well, now shit, I just gave my power away, okay? Now I feel worse than I did before." So coming, this is where coming to believe or willingness comes to play. I am willing that a power greater than my ego consciousness can restore me to sanity. And then the third step, which is another part of surrender. See, it's not just a one step deal. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. Letting go of my fear, letting go of all of it, saying, you know, it doesn't look that way, God, but you got this. I wish it would happen more the way I'd like it to. Or the way I wish it would be more predictable so I could feel safer than I do feel right now. But I have to realize that there's a divine consciousness that's running this whole show. And that sometimes in our human consciousness, it has to get worse before it gets better. I wish that were not true. But I think we're still stuck in that particular realm of thinking. What am I going to do with it?
I like that last part you said, Jerry, just like, you know, it seems easy and simple, but it's like I give this over to something greater than me, and not trying to figure it out, because that's for me. But then that human part is like, well, what's it going to look like? How's it going to be figured out? And it starts like
all the time.
Chatting thing, man.
Want to use the mic? Come on up. There you go.
I just started thinking about like...
you're going to have to hold the mic a little bit closer. There you go.
Talking about the fear. And something I've started to allow myself to kind of look at face to face is just my fear of starting a journey on my own, so much so that I've kind of like put it on hold a lot, because like I have this fear of going at it alone. So I'm like, okay, well, how about I stay with like a friend or someone I'm really interested in, and like help them to like be on this level, and then they can be on this journey with me, and then I won't have to be alone and everything's gonna be fine. And then like it's kind of had to start to move backwards and realizing that, you know, understanding the lesson of free will and the fact that even if someone does begin to have the same, like similar thoughts of wanting to escape or wanting to more so like go find an adventure for yourself, it's going to be a different adventure, you know? So like in the end, it's most likely that I'm still going to have to go alone, at least for a little while until I find my people, right? And so, like, I would use that as an excuse, or I'd just be like, well, hold on, well, this person still needs my help, right? But, like, that just insults their intelligence and their way of spiritual growth, because, like, they can do what they can for themselves. And one thing that my friend here, we had this conversation this morning, because I was telling, it was about a windshield wiper, and I was like, you need to fix this, why not just invest money into yourself to fix this? And then I started talking about my glasses, because like I have like a missing thing, and I was like, I should do that too with myself. And they were like, oh, well, see, like, I'm a good friend because I let you get there on your own. I'm like, I'm a good friend too because I'm very direct. And then I was like, you know what we do? We learn from each other. You'll be more direct and I'll let you get your lessons in, you know? And so it's just a lot of learning to be able to not only step back with the people I care about, but also step forward for myself.
Ooh, beautiful.
It's really hard lessons, but they're simple, like you said, like simple lessons. And one thing that, kept going in my head for a while is like, you'll start to see more peace in your life when you learn how to listen to simple directions. Like, follow simple directions. It's good stuff.
Beautifully said. Thank you. Ultimately, you could say, from a human context, we are going to be alone. But ultimately, ultimately, after we drop all of the masks, all of the disguises, all of the excuses, all of the stuff, we are still connected to divine consciousness. And we are never unconnected from that, nor will we ever be. On a human level, essentially, yes, it all comes down to you. Okay? You're the one who's going to have to make the choice, no matter what we surround ourselves with. I remember years ago, there was a song that Stevie Nicks wrote about her friend of hers who had died. The song was called Gypsy. And they made a video out of it. And at the end of the song, here's Stevie Nicks with these flowers in her hair and this circle of children who are kind of dancing around her. And she's standing on the edge of a cliff. I mean, the symbolism was just absolutely beautiful. And the last line of the song was, "It all comes down to you. It all comes down to you." Paradoxical place, being alone and being free. And being alone is rather a misnomer, being connected to your divine consciousness and being free. Well, I think we set a world record today because we didn't even get off the page. We're on. I think we got a paragraph. Which is okay because we don't have to win the race. We don't have to get the prize, okay? So let's take a couple of minutes to do a meditation around all of this, okay? It's so delightful to be able to laugh at this trip. Because on some level, it really becomes rather humorous, right? No matter what level of consciousness we're working on, what the context might happen to be, is just realizing, yeah. And when we say laughing at ourselves, we're not doing that in a scornful, stupid, or judgmental kind of way. We're saying, yeah, I'm still growing. I'm still there. I still got that. I still choose to get that once in a while, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with me. I just am. I'm just working through my stuff, just like everybody else's. So we're going to take a couple minutes, if you don't mind, to just let yourself get comfortable in your space. Wherever you happen to be. And just get aware, become aware of your breathing. Breathing in, breathing out. And notice that even though some of your inner voices might still be talking, it's almost like they're in a room down the hallway. And that we are surrounded gently yet powerfully. We are surrounded by a spaciousness and a silence that goes beyond thought. To recognize this silence and spaciousness is always here. even in the midst of the noise and chaos and confusion of the world. It's like, this is my anchor. This is my grounding. This is my connection to divine spirit. Jesus once said, I will never leave you alone. I am always with you. No matter how you feel. No matter what you are doing, no matter what you are thinking. Paul asked the question, can anything separate us from the love of God? And the answer is nothing can. Nothing. I am never separate from unconditional love. Never. Even if I'm asleep, even if I'm forgetting, think of people in your life right now that you love. Even when you're not thinking about them, even when you're not thinking about loving them, you still are loving them. It doesn't stop. How ridiculous would that be, that I only love you when I'm thinking about you? If that's true for us as human beings, how true is that for each one of us? Breathe that into your being. Take it with you today. Take it with you this morning. Back to your heartbeat, back to your breathing, the rhythm of life. And when you're ready to, you can stretch, take a deep breath, open your eyes when you're ready. So again, a reminder, we will be here next week in the chapel at Unity as well as online. The week after that, the 26th, we will not be here. So there will not be a class on the 26th. The week after that, I will let you know, most likely I will be here. But if that happens to change, I'll let you know.
There'll be a church service on the 26th.
As far as I know, yes. Yes. We'll be out of town. And right the day after Christmas, I think we'd be just, anyway, we decided not to do it. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Blessings, peacefulness.
Thank you, Jerry.
Joy, light, grace. I will see you all next week. Okay.
Take care. Right. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
You got it. Thank you.